Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth. Now, this episode, we have Ashley, Jeremy, and myself just talking about poops. And that's not a lie. So if you are poop sensitive, maybe this isn't your episode. But if you have the childish sense of humor of a 5-year-old as a 37-year-old man, then you will love this episode. We're also going to talk about the great movie for 4th of July week. Is 4th of July a big deal outside of the U.S.? I'm guessing you guys don't give a shit. You just set off fireworks at some other time to watch your Will Smith movies. But here in the States, this is how we celebrate. Am I right? But if you are a big listener and a fan of the show, we ask you, hey, drop us a 5-star rating on the Apple Podcasts, or, you know, we're a small-time little outfit here, you know, throw it out there, tell a friend, share the podcast and the joy that is Quality Time. So without further ado, get strapped in, turn that volume up to 11, and get ready for part one of Independence Day.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
I had a shit one time. This place in Pikesville called Jillian's that used to do comedy. It was the worst place to ever do a comedy show ever, just to let you know. I'd gotten to this show and the bubbling had started before I got there. I knew there was something on the ride. There was emergency happening down in my gut. Mm-hmm. So I get in there, and so the bathroom is intimate, let's just say. It's a public bathroom for multiple people, but there's a urinal here, okay, on the, like, to the left, and, like, if you're using the urinal, your shoulder has to touch the stall door here, and you're, like, and the stall is tight, too. It's just enough for you to sit and shit. So an intimate bathroom, right? So I get in there, and I sit down, but there's a guy taking a piss right next to me. And I'm like, oh, God, I can't. What I'm holding back is, like, the Hoover Dam of shits, like, on the brink right now. And I'm to the point where I'm, like, shaking right now. Like, oh, God.
Yeah.
I got to do this. Because I can, like, reach down and touch this guy's foot. You understand? I'm that close to him. So I hear him finishing up. I hear the door close. And another guy comes right in. And at this point, I'm like,
nightmare.
I'm like, at this point, it's too late. I can't hold it anymore. He gets up next to me, and I let loose what sounded like a machine, like that, just straight 35 seconds of pure flatulence mixed with spray shit. It just sounded it sounded like when you chum the waters for sharks, like just like this. And I was just like, I could just hear the guy after like the first couple seconds of it happening. He was like, oh my God. And I just remember after like the vein like subsiding in my forehead like this, and the tear that had formed from the corner of my eye from both embarrassment and laughter, I looked over and I was like, I'm sorry. So and then I knew that I kept looking around at people's feet because I knew I was like, I recognize the guy's shoes. And I was like, that guy, we know each other's shoes. He's going to know I'm the one that shit. I'm going to be the nun that knows he knows that I shit. So
yeah.
We made eye contact, and I just gave him one of these, like, What's up? Respect.
Yeah, I feel that very hard.
And then yeah. I bombed at doing comedy right after that. Oh, it was such a good time.
And I'm so sorry. Well, if it makes you feel any better, I don't know if you know the story, but I once shit myself in my boyfriend's bedroom. Yeah, I was 24.
How much of this should I share for the show at this point?
Oh no, it's a great story. Okay. You are more than welcome to share.
I just want you to know we're rolling. That's all. No,
you're good. As long as you don't mind. Yeah.
No, I'm good.
So I was like, I want to say 22, 24 at the very oldest. I had just moved back from Australia and I was dating this really great guy and he would get up at like 6 every morning, go off to work. I think I was off that morning and I would spend the night. And he leaves for work. He lets me stay behind because, you know, he's like, she's too fat to steal stuff. She can't make it out the door. Like, she's fine.
Hey, that was part of the reason we had you on the show. I knew you couldn't steal.
Yeah, they're like,
anything.
Ashley can't get away with shit.
That is true. There are no fat thieves. Like, there's never a movie about a portly man who is a master thief.
Yeah, like, looking at me, you're like, she probably lies a lot, like, because she lies to herself, but, like, no, she can't, she can't physically hide anything. But, so he would leave me behind the house, so I would sleep longer, and a little bit of backstory there, he was fixing up his childhood home, him and his slightly older sister were like, you know, let's live in this for now, let's rebuild it together, and then we can flip it and split the profits, you know. And it has one bathroom in this house, which I refuse to ever live into this day because of this incident.
No. We had a single bathroom in our last home, and it was problems. It was a lot of problems.
It is a nightmare. Like, we talk about horrific things on the show in these movies. Like, no, that's my nightmare. But so...
you want to know the real nightmare? Living with Jeremy Woodworth in a single bathroom home.
Oh, my God. It's like, I got to look up the movie. There's a movie where, like, they walk into the bathroom and there's been, like, a dead body in the tub for, like, ever. And it's, like, turned to, like, gravy. That's what I imagine. It's like,
yes. That's just we just call that the regular Jeremy bath.
Gravy.
I don't mean to sidetrack your story because I want to get to it, but like, have you ever listened to the episode where Jeremy talked about when he went to Monster Mania and got into the hot tub with his monster friends?
I feel like I remember this episode, but I do not remember that.
Jeremy told this story where he got into a hot tub at Monster Mania with a bunch of his convention buddies, and people were like, oh, look, there's a lot of extra bubbles in here. And it was really just Jeremy's skin floating on top of it, off of his body, that he was taking handfuls out and putting on the side. And everybody's just cooking in that Jeremy broth for like an hour. I've never been more disgusted in my entire life than just seeing the Jeremy film that looks like that fucking goop that'll eat you in Creepshow 2. God, ugh, it's pure nightmare. Pure nightmare. And we've destroyed Ashley. We've destroyed
him. I hate you right now because my butthole is like... No, I'm not going to shit myself because of the story. I'm going to hold on to the lampshade. It's fine. All right. Okay. I hate you so much right now. Okay. Oh, boy. Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that when I don't have a loose butthole. But so... It's one bathroom, and I try to go back to sleep, and all of a sudden, it's exactly as you describe it. You can feel something happening inside you, and you're like, oh, trains are coming. And you can't get off the tracks in time. It's Stand By Me. It is so difficult. And I try to ignore it, and I'm like, no, this is unignorable. So I get up and I walk to the bathroom and I see light underneath and I already know.
Oh,
and I'm like,
no.
Oh God, it's the sister. And I'm like, knocking, like, excuse me. And she's like, I'm almost out. Sorry, I'm just getting ready for work. I'm like, okay. And I go back to his bedroom because I'm an idiot. And I'm not just like, hey, I got to take a shit. Because I was only dating him for a couple months. And I start pacing the bedroom and like the poo sweats start coming, you just start sweating. You have to shit so bad.
Oh,
and I am panicking because I feel like I'm being sawed apart from the inside out because of how bad my IBS is. And I'm just like, I gotta shit. And so I look around the bedroom and I see his wicker trash can. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to shit into this wicker trash can. So I pour everything out of the trash can and I start to take my pants off because I'm going to shit in this bedroom trash can. And I stand up real quick and I grab the edge of the dresser.
Oh, no.
And all of a sudden I go,
oh, no.
Those were brand new leggings. I had bought them the day before.
Oh, no.
There are two ways to describe what happened. One, if you've ever had one of those lava cakes from Domino's, you know, when you open up the set, it just flowed out of me. And also, it's kind of like squeezing a tube of toothpaste.
Mama's making lava cakes. Everybody back away.
I felt like Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids. I was like, look away! Coming out of me like lava. Like, it just oozed. Like, again, because the leggings, you could almost see, like, a bulge moving down my pant leg of just shit. And then the minute I shit myself, I hear her close the door. And she's like, I'm going to work, bye! And I'm like, I hate you, bitch. I hate you so much. When I go in the bathroom and I, like, take my clothes off, I'm like, yeah! It's just the worst thing I've ever seen. Then I laid in the shower, cried for a while, got cleaned up, laid back in his bed, and then, like, 15 minutes after laying there, my mind was like, hey, dummy, you're at the scene of a crime. You gotta leave. Like, what's wrong with you? So then I left. And then he broke up with me.
And so you left the poo-poo there. Hey, what's up, Jer Bear?
Hello, Ashley.
How's it going, brother?
I didn't say goodbye last week. I had to get to work.
I know. It's okay.
It's okay. We love you either way. We just let the magic happen.
I knew you would have figured it out, but I had to use my mime techniques to tell Eric I had to go.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, me and Jeremy actually have telepathy. It's a brotherly thing for the show. So every time, it's weird, every time he actually climaxes, I also do. So it's we haven't climaxed in 4 years, and that's where we're at right now.
That's called the Coruscant, Planet Coruscant.
Yes, that is exactly
the brothers, all brothers have that are twins.
I was going to say, I thought it was called the Siamese twin when you both jack off at the same time.
We were telling lots of fun poop stories. And I told Ashley about the time you got into the hot tub at Monster Mania with your Monster Mania friends. Just to bring them up to speed.
What does that have to do with poo?
Yeah, because we needed something grosser than poo stories to open up the show.
Oh, are you talking about how there was so much skin that there was almost like a stew?
Yes.
A skin stew?
Yes, the Jeremy broth that you made with your friends.
We can't, because I'm going to shit myself if we keep talking about this. I can't. My butthole's too loose. We can't. Like, we can't.
It almost had the consistency of ramen soup.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to shit. Oh, we can't do this. Well,
welcome to the shitisode. Quality Time's finest. Oh my gosh. And
I just like to see a biohazard thing hung around that hot tub after I was done with it.
Oh gosh. Anyway, welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Eric Woodworth, and joined by my ever-loving brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
Who are you talking about?
I'm sorry. Who's on the show this week?
Oh, it's me. It's Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah. You're Jeff Goldblum.
I'm going to help you guys with the show tonight.
I mean, you do a lot of shitty impressions, okay? But this has got to take the cake as the...
No, I'm Jeff Goldblum, and I'm about to eat a sandwich by vomiting on it first, because that's the way flies actually eat all their food.
Jerry's, of course, referring to our movie tonight, which is ID4 Independence Day for the 4th of July weekend. Maybe this is going to end up being a two-parter. I'm not sure. Anyway, but before I even get into that, we're joined by the hostess with the mostest, the newest member of the Quality Time family, Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you?
I am good. Besides the consistent diarrhea, I'm great.
Yes, we were talking pre-show about your poo-poo problems. It has been fun. She destroyed a sheets last night. Everybody's up to sleeping.
She got the COVID?
Yeah.
No, I got super drunk at Magoobie's last night. Now I'm hungover and can't stop pooping.
Yeah.
All right.
That's how
it'd
be happening.
It's a hungover poo.
That's how it be happening sometimes.
Hey, Eric, can I ask a little test question? How does my mic sound? Because it sounds like I'm probably going through these headphones, but
no,
I
you
could
sound
use
good.
A mic.
It sounds
all right,
good.
I sound good. All right.
Your levels look good. It's as good as I think you're going to get. So can I tell you guys real quick before we get into too much tonight and I burp into the mic multiple times? Hey, let me tell you guys about that. Let me tell you guys about life real quick.
Right, let me tell a story about my young child.
So I'm going to share my screen in a second here, but let me bring it up to speed. I walked into my place of business, the place where I work, my 9-to-5 job, which I'll leave it nameless, okay? Now, this place I work, I have to work with pure trash. That's the best way I can describe it. I don't know who did this, but I walked in and the bathroom, there's two bathrooms in the building. There's one on the first floor, there's one on the second floor. The one on the first floor, this was the condition I walked into it on Monday morning. So let me share this with you. That was the actual toilet that I walked into Monday morning. And for our listeners who are watching as my co-hosts look at this in shock and horror, it looks as if somebody took their asshole and instead of like placing it on each side of it, like straddled just one side of the shitter and then just shit down one side of the toilet and then maybe use their foot to smear it around a little bit on the floor. And it's so, just pure absolute garbage filth.
So Eric, I'm kind of upset that you would share something that I told you in confidence about how I use the toilet.
If you've listened to past episodes, I've told you about the people at work that make toilet coffee, as in we were out of water one day, so somebody scooped out the back of the the toilet, the reservoir to make coffee one day and told no one. He was like, it's all fine, it's toilet water. So this is just a continuation of that. Now listen, everybody looked at that and were like, I'm not fucking cleaning that shit. I'm not cleaning that shit. So this stayed like this for 3 whole days
at my
place
gosh.
Of employment. So 3 whole days, this is how the condition of the toilet. Finally, day 3 comes and this is Thursday now, right? Thursday, because Wednesday night the cleaning lady finally comes, and thank God. I had a side bet with one of the guys at work. I was like, this bitch comes in, she looks at that and she's like, nah. No, I don't get paid enough for that. But sure enough, she did clean it up. I swear, not even 2 hours into my workday, I go in to go check this out, and somebody is already pissed on the floor. There's clear piss on the floor right here, which this is photo evidence number 2 of this. So I just wanted to share, no matter how bad you think your job is, you don't work with the level of pure disrespect that I work with every single day.
That is so gross.
Yeah, and I just don't, what goes through your head when like this is what I don't get. When you, was this an accident or was it an intentional act of terrorism on the bathroom, right? Like, if it was an accident, I feel like you're like, I gotta fucking clean up this evidence. Nobody can know about what I've done here. This can't ever come back on me. Or was somebody so brazen was like, fuck this place. I'm gonna fucking spray like a cat down the one leg of this fucking toilet. Like, I don't understand what goes through people's heads here.
I think it's biological warfare. Someone is sending a clear message. Because, yeah, just like a cat, like, I pee on all of my stuff to let people know that it's my area.
Classic Ashley. Well, that's good. Now, Ashley, I heard you got to see a little skirmish last night at the Magoobies Joke House.
Oh, man. I just, such a hard-on for the suffering of others. I cannot wait to...
If you're a Rob and Joe listener, you've probably already heard about this story, but Ashley was from in the crowd, getting a crowd view of this. So if you're listening to this, you're going to get the another account of the same story you heard from the Rob and Joe show, but from the perspective of another viewer, as opposed to Rob Mayer, who this was perpetrated upon. Ashley, tell us what happened.
Oh, boys. Eric... Jeremy. In fact, Jeremy, I called your brother last night at like 9 o'clock after it happened because it was that good. So I was at the lovely establishment in Baltimore where we all tend to do comedy to protect their identity. I'll call it Shmush Movies. and we had just had Todd Fleming was hosting last night. He did a great job.
Shout outs TF, Todd Fleming, love him.
Hell yeah, he did a great job. Definitely a smaller audience. It was their first opening night since all of this started with COVID. So they were at, 50% capacity, very small rooms, everybody spaced out. I was by myself because, hashtag loser. But there was a couple that was diagonally in front of me, 6 feet apart. And at one point, so Rob featured, again, killed it. Rob at one point sees them having a good time and decides to ask, as usual, the guy's name. He's like, "Hey man, what's your name?" And the guy is just like not paying attention. He's kind of looking at his feet like, "Oh, I tied my shoes by myself. Look at that." And
did you see that? That's a double knot, honey. Did you look at it?
I saw Reading Rainbow before I came today. I described it to Eric as like special energy, to where it's like, he doesn't seem to be the brightest, but if you make this person mad, they'll rip you in half.
Like he would be impressed with Lieutenant Dan's magic legs, correct? That was the,
yes, that's right. That's how I put it to you yesterday. He's like a Forrest Gump type, to where like seems very, very weak and feeble, but he's willing to get shot in the butt talks. So I think, this guy's got what we need. So the girlfriend kind of punches him in the arm and is like, "Hey, dumbass, he's asking your name, like answer him." And he's still kind of unintelligible, but he's like, "Oh, my name's Ryan." And Rob responds something along the lines of, "Oh, like Ryan, you know what? That's cool. I won't make you participate. We can already tell you're fucked up." Like,
yeah.
Pretty innocent. Like, just, whatever. The guy seems fine. Like, he just gets kind of quiet, but there seems to be no trouble. Like, minutes go by,
but
and nothing
inside,
seems wrong.
A storm is brewing.
Inside, he's like, "Nobody calls me fucked up. Like, I don't fuck my sister." Like, it was. it was like he woke up out of like a crackhead stupor, like, and just kind of stands up to his full 5'6" height.
Yeah, and this has been like 5 or 6 minutes that have elapsed since this, right? Okay, got it.
Yeah, it's not immediate. He's just been sitting there thinking about everybody that ever told him he was slow. And he just rises up like a drunk phoenix from the ashes and starts to crawl across the stage. And my favorite part of this story is his initial angry response to Rob makes no goddamn sense. As he crawls across the stage, he goes, "Fuck you, Rob. You know why, Rob? You're a whore." And everybody in the audience is deeply confused because we're like, who is fucking Rob? So Rob, obviously, though, the guy keeps coming for him, and Rob is clearly like, "Holy crap, this is getting serious." But I have to tell Rob, especially if he's listening, wonderful human being, why in the world you would keep holding the microphone and shouting into it that you need help instead of defending yourself, I don't quite understand. Like, I'm not sure what his strategy was on that. I'm like, maybe if you just keep shouting, he'll go away. it didn't make sense. So thankfully, the headliner, Larry Lancaster, jumps in and saves his lily white ass.
ushered this guy off. And then he drops a big bomb on everybody.
Oh, yes. But here's the thing. It wasn't even directed at Larry. While screaming at Rob as he's being dragged away, he calls him.
Calls him the baby.
And everybody's hard, like, oh.
Was it hard R or A? Who did it?
The
hard
first
R?
Time. I'm pretty sure it was a, so he's a soft A.
Soft A. Soft A. And he looks at Larry. He's just like, it's cool. I mean him.
Oh, no. Well, so here's the actual part of that. Then the second time around, especially the first time we even hear it as a soft A, we're all like, no, don't do that. And as Larry is like getting him halfway out the door, he then says, I'm white. I can say, it's a hard R. And everybody who was black in the room, I mean, all the white people agree, but all the black people are like, no, that's not how that works. It's Juneteenth. Get out. Like, it was a doozy. And I'm so glad I only had to pay $20 to see it. So,
man,
ladies and gentlemen, this
what
weekend.
A deal.
What a deal. $20 for some race wars.
If that isn't comedy, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
I'd heard from Rob's side of the story that the guy said, he's like, I'm cool. It's cool. I'm white. And I was in Jessup for 5 years. And we.
Hilarious.
We were talking with my other comedian friends. And I was like, I guess if you are white, if you serve 5 years time, that's the only time you're allowed to use the N word, but only for the 5 years as you're being going back into society.
Larry had the best clap back to that. Cause then after he was gone, it's Larry's time to headline and we're all still kind of shaken, but Larry gets up there and he's like, I want you guys to remember that young man and I want you to feel bad for him because that's what happens when you get raped in prison.
He was just like,
so how long did Larry Lancaster rape him?
Well,
oh man, he couldn't believe it. He's like, look at this white on white crime. You guys are ridiculous.
I think the funniest part is like Larry Lancaster, shout out, hilarious comedian.
Hilarious.
He was a former prison guard at Jessup for like 8 years. So like he got up there, he was just like, hey, what's up, Frank? How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. Ryan, it's been years. How are you?
Yeah. He handled it like a champ, and that's exactly what he said. He's like, I'm a former prison guard. He's like, I'm not afraid of this 5'6" white. Like, are you kidding me?
Ladies and gents, are we ready to get into our film for tonight? It sounds like it's going to be a two-parter, so get ready. It's funny. Tonight, we're going over the 1996 classic, Independence Day, for the 4th of July week. We're all here in a time when the world wasn't divided with race riots. It was 1996. It was 4 years after the LA. We had already healed. And we needed the power of aliens destroying the world to really bring us all together. And
you know what this movie really needed during that penultimate moment when they're about to fight? They needed like Tom Cruise to come in his wheelchair and say, I have to pee in a bag!
Yes. No. I did, in keeping in tradition with quality time content, I threw together a little song just to get us warmed up for tonight, okay?
Yay!
So here's my little ditty that I threw together for tonight's episode.
Hi, Susie!
Ho-ho-ho-ho! Somebody picked a bad day to come to the planet Earth! Oh, you thought you would come and take over now, our little planet. But little did you know we had Will Smith and Bill Pullman and Mary McDonald, just us two, and Robin Ogier, Ronnie Quaid, and Margaret Collins, James Redford. Oh, and we've got Jeff Goldblum. Gonna make a virus out of thin air that his Jewish dad done gave him the idea.
because he's overbearing and just trying to protect his son. What are you going to do? We got a stripper, and we got Will Smith, and we got Jeff motherfucking Goldblum. So there we go. I made a little Independence Day song, guys.
I love
just
it.
Just for that. I'll play it in its entirety at the end of the episode, as we always do if you stick around for the end credits. So the movie starts off, and the aliens arrive right away. Oh, gosh! The satellites are picking up a message, so they go ahead and wake up the boss.
It's the real thing. A radio signal from another world.
Let's not jump the gun here.
So they wake up the boss. They realize that the message is coming from the moon. Next, we see the dad from the Wonder Years and Frank from Scarface, played by Robert Loggia, or as it's actually Robert Loggia, but in the Quality Time podcast world, Robert Loggia, the only way we pronounce his name. And they start discussing that the U.S. UFO has appeared near the moon. Next, we get to see our president, Mr. Bill Pullman, returning for back-to-back episodes. It's an all Bill Pullman June, apparently. So
I love him. I really want to get probed by Bill Pullman.
I think it's important to make sure he gets a phone call from his wife, the first lady, and he makes a kid fucking joke. Do you understand that in the first couple minutes of this? Where he's just like, I'm sitting next to a beautiful brunette, and they pan over, and it's his 5-year-old daughter that's in the bed, which is low key, knowing what we know about Hollywood now, clearly a kid fucking joke. So, anyway, they.
Can we preface this movie that this is mid 90s? And we knew who our real president was at that time, named Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And, of course, we expect Bill Clinton to have a blowjob being done to him in the first scene. And I pretty much think the movie should have been Bill Pullman having a blowjob every single second during the film.
Yes. I think...
I volunteer as tribute.
I just think it'd be like he's in the war room and is like, wait a second, somebody's gonna start sucking my dick before I go any further.
Hey, you
and then as he's coming in my mouth, I'm like, it's coming from the moon.
Okay, bring on the next blowjob.
So he talks to some of his staffers, and the Secretary of Defense starts to bring him up to speed as the ship, 1/4 the size of the moon, starts to deploy smaller ships about the size of like a mile or two wide each as they start to distribute themselves around the world. Next, we get to meet Jeff Goldblum, who plays David. I'll still only refer to him as Jeff Goldblum in this film. Deal with it. And his very Jewish, overbearing father as they're playing chess. And his father is played by none other than actor Judd Hirsch. Jeremy, what is Judd Hirsch known best for?
I don't know. I've never seen him before. I think he's like a new actor and stuff.
New actor. Yeah. I would say probably most famously known as from the show Taxi. He's the main guy.
I was really hoping you were going to say Dear John.
Dear John. So. Yes, that was my next for sure. That was my next for sure.
Hey, Rika! Rika, you mean you've been something other than Taxi, Rika!
So David is able to beat his dad very easily in chess, and he's like, "This is not checkmate. This is not checkmate." And he like the over the top extra Jewishness that he plays this character is, it's a chef's kiss to the stereotypical roles from the 90s. I really do enjoy it. David,
he's always asking for some schmear for his bagel in every single scene. So
yes, classic. So David takes his bike to work to see his very gay assistant.
David, what the hell's the point of having a beeper if you're not gonna turn it on?
It was turned on. I was ignoring you. Hello. What's the big emergency?
It started this morning. Every station's making like it's the 1950s. We got static. We got snow. All kinds of distortions. Nobody knows.
hell are you doing? There's a reason we have bins labeled recycle.
What the hell is going on? My God in heaven.
So, yeah, that's his super gay assistant, who I think this guy, Harvey Fierstein, he played just every major gay role throughout the 90s. They were like, we need not a super attractive gay man for this. He was just like, Harvey Fierstein, of course, we're going to bring him in so he can be in the Birdcage, so he can be in Mrs. Doubtfire. It doesn't matter what it is.
I love him
but he plays
in Mrs. Doubtfire.
But he plays the exact same character. He's like, you know what this movie could use? We could really use Harvey Fierstein, and right in this moment, right now.
can I rate this as like one of the top 20 most annoying scenes in any movie ever?
Oh my
just
god!
Just put Goldblum and Fierstein in the same scene together talking about recycling, like. This is so unbelievably annoying to watch.
Well, that's the beauty of Independence Day. You know, this was the old summer blockbuster film where we try to hit every single demographic represented in the movie. They're like, we gotta have a gay guy, we gotta have a super liberal guy, we gotta have a handsome president, we gotta have the black guy who dates us, we gotta have a stripper, we gotta have the white trash drunk guy who flies fucking crop dusting planes. Like, we make sure that we hit every single possible demographic that we can to get people butts in seats. And,
oh, wait a second. Here's the Eskimo guy. Hey, he's got a big harpoon with him. He's going to fight a giant whale. Yeah.
I like it because with the diversity of this cast, they could actually summon two different Captain Planets. Like, that's how diverse the cast is for this.
So I realized that how much I love Mars Attacks versus this movie.
Oh, you're right. I do love Mars Attacks, but it is 4th of July weekend, and you know what? I do love many parts of this movie. Next we see and then Jeff Goldblum, he gets to hear the little signal that's coming from off there. He goes, I think it's aliens. He just knows it's aliens from the sound of this weird techno beat that's fucking they're emitting. He's like, this is clearly their goth punk scene. I can tell that. And next we get to meet Randy Quaid and his family, who's a crop duster and a total fucking loser drunk, but can still fly Cessna planes and crop dust the wrong fields.
Isn't that crazy? Well, I have to say, though, I really sympathize with that character because I, too, sometimes crop dust the wrong location.
Clean up the toilet at so.
And I blame it on aliens. They're like, they abused you sexually.
Hey, Eric, next time somebody poops on the floor and leaves it like that, say they did a Randy Quaid. By the way, this is another movie where it's pretty close to the real Randy Quaid. There is no acting. So.
No, this is Randy Quaid full on. They're just like, they're like, well, what do you think my character should be? Exactly. Just like what you did in National Lampoon's Vacation, but just, you know, the regular you. Just turn down this much. That's all we need.
We're going to do this scene where you're going to be dumping your shit from out of your plane where you shit while you're flying. So, and that's going to cause an explosion and cause reindeer to fly past the moon.
The funniest part, though, is looking at both of Randy Quaid's children who look like there's no way. It's like the same kind of children as, like, you know, King of the Hill where Dale's children are clearly the fathered by the Native American guy. Like, none of his kids are his, clearly. That he just takes care of them shittily.
Does anybody recognize the first kid?
No, but
daughter?
Is it you talking about the daughter or the son? Because the son. Looks like it looks like if you bought Keanu Reeves off Wish. Like, he's not we couldn't get Keanu, so we picked this kid.
I was gonna say he looks like, what is it? Is it Neil Diamond Phillips' kid?
Oh, very good, very good, very good reference, Neil Diamond.
Lou
did
Diamond.
I say Neil Diamond?
Yes,
is it Neil Diamond?
Neil Diamond Phillips. But Neil Diamond Phillips is actually the love son between Lou and Neil.
No, but seriously, obviously he's the beloved Frank from the movie Donnie Darko. And he's also the second person I've actually met at Chiller And the first person in this film I've met was obviously Robert Loggia. So.
Robert Loggia.
That's awesome. Well, I know that that actor, he also, that kid is also in Gone in 60 Seconds. He's one of the team.
Three movies. Look at that. So the president gets to meet some more of his staff. He upgrades the threat level to DEFCON 3. And the military tells him that new ships are entering the atmosphere within the next 25 minutes. We see the ships start to pop up all over the world. Iraq, New York, Moscow, L.A., all the major cities of the planet. Now, Jeff Goldblum's character, David, finally sees the news feed that the aliens have arrived, which is weird that he's not up to speed because he works at a fucking news station. Like, he works at the TV station and doesn't watch TV. Whatever. He's horrible at his job. He's listening to fucking weird satellite sounds. And his sweet assistant ushers everyone into the basement.
No, don't run. Walk down to the basement. There's no shame in hiding. Oh, I better call my mother.
Get it, hiding. I don't think there's been much hiding in his life. So,
next we learn that Russ, who's played by Randy Quaid, was abducted by aliens himself.
Russ, when they took you up in their spaceship, did they do any sexual things to you at all, you recollect?
And as they do that, the bullies have to eat their words as the spaceship just comes rolling on through, and then all of a sudden his rape was real. So
a lot of people compare this scene to that other water scene in Jurassic Park when the dinosaur shows up.
Yeah,
and they usually say the same thing. Jurassic Park was great, this movie sucks.
I can see Jeremy does not like the movie ID4. For me, it holds a special place in my heart. I remember this. I saw this movie in the movie theater, and it shit all over Titanic, in my opinion. So,
agreed.
Next, we get to meet some more of our characters. Vivica A. Fox, who is just, I think, in this movie, so we get to see her as a stripper. I mean, it is a just the most perfect of scenes. Ships position themselves all over the world, including directly over the White House and New York City. Will Smith wakes up to a new world of panic in his neighborhood. He sees choppers scrambling and shit is getting real. David thinks he's figured out, though, what their signal is broadcasting.
Jeremy, tell you that the signal hidden in the satellite feed is slowly recycling down to extinction?
Not really.
Countdown.
A countdown. We're gonna count down to what, David?
It's like in chess. First, you strategically position your pieces. Then, when the timing's right, you strike. See? They're positioning themselves all over the world, using this one signal to synchronize their efforts. In approximately 6 hours, the signal's going to disappear and the countdown's going to be over.
And then what?
Checkmate.
Checkmate. By the way, I think it's at this point I should mention, this movie is 2.5 fucking hours long, and it makes no sense why it's so long at all. There is a lot that we will browse over, but if you ever want to watch this film simply so that you can hear about the love story between Vivica A. Fox and her befriending the First Lady, or Bill Pullman watching his wife slowly die for 15 minutes, then have at it, okay? Do yourself a favor. But otherwise, stick around. We're going to talk about explosions and fucking Randy Quaid as we keep going through this thing. Next, the president addresses the situation to the American public. Will Smith leaves his base, leaves to go to base to, because he is a pilot apparently, and the president is worried. David's dad is worried. Everyone is worried.
All I'm saying is they got people who handle these things, David. They want HBO, they'll call you. Look at these people, look. Huh? Vultures. They take and then they go.
They're going faster than we are. Look at this, well, we're in the fast lane.
I can't go faster, they're cutting me off here.
No one's cutting you off. We're gonna get a ticket.
They're getting in front of me, I can't go any faster.
All right. Oh, I love, I love his overbearing dad throughout this
entire
film.
Can we say that there's only one scene in a movie that's more Jewish than Seinfeld?
Yes.
My favorite part of that scene is whenever his dad's like, what? You think if we don't hurry up, we won't get there? And then they look at each other like, oh, the White House might be gone by the time we get there.
So, meanwhile, Miguel, who's the knockoff Keanu Reeves, Randy Quaid's son, he stops his sister from having teenage sex in a thing. Which, when we see further in the thing, he fucked up here. Okay, this was her shot to fucking get her fucking parts slammed, and what
she
was probably
at least 13 years old,
which was probably going to be a statutory rape of some sort. I get that, but you know,
yeah. But what girl doesn't want to get boned by Andrew Keegan? Yeah. I mean, it's 1997.
OMG. Yeah. So back at base, Steve, who's played by Will Smith's character, gets his letter from NASA. His buddy reads it, who's played by Henry Connick Jr., which I don't know what Henry Connick Jr. did after 1996. He just kind of disappeared. Harry Connick. I apologize. Who is adorable, great singer, and thought he had an illustrious career ahead of him, and then I'm sorry. Ashley threw me off with her dick sucking motions when we were talking.
I love Harry Connick Jr. He was in Hope Floats with Sandra Bullock, and he played a serial killer in the movie Copycat with Sigourney Weaver.
I haven't seen that movie in ages.
Oh, and he's so ugly in that movie, but he is such a treasure. Like, the whole time I'm reliving this movie from my childhood, I'm like, oh my God, my house looks like a Krispy Kreme explosion.
So he reads his NASA acceptance, he finds out if Will Smith is going to get into NASA, because that's all he really wants to do. But it doesn't turn out well. And he says, you know what? You need to just keep kissing more booty.
You need to, like, kiss some serious booty to get ahead in this world, man. That's what I'm trying to tell you. See, I like the one knee approach because it puts the booty like right.
And as he's doing it, something falls out of his pocket. Oh, man. And it's a ring.
Jasmine kind of has a thing for dolphins. I don't know.
Stevie, this is a wedding ring.
And just as he does it, another officer walks by like, whoa, easy gays. I got to get out of here.
Still don't ask, don't tell.
Hey, I ain't telling, all right? You guys go have a fuck fest over in the shower. I'm going to go take two. So right after that, we get to see the sexy-ass Vivica A. Fox.
Wait. You forgot that moment when he read the letter about trying to get into NASA.
Okay.
And the letter says, no, you're not accepted because you're black.
I knew it. That's the underlying story and what we're fighting against at this point. You know, it's sad. Yeah. He had to do, by the way, spoiler alert, he does get into NASA. And the only thing, if you're black and to get into NASA, is you have to fly an alien craft and blow up a mothership. And then you're like, I guess you can be in NASA now. Like, that's...
it has a side note. It says, we already have a janitor.
Oh, Jesus, Jeremy.
Well, you know what's weird? That it's like, if they're trying to get rid of black people, you'd think more of them would be at NASA, so you can just send them to the moon.
Well, there's a really racist joke in there, which I do hold back on. So.
Oh, good.
I do hold back sometimes.
Are we going to be able to publish this episode?
This is why we can't do the show live. So,
this is why Eric edits me out on the regular. So.
David and his father go to meet the president. He finds out that the president's staffer is David's ex, who he's struggling with, blah, blah, blah. He tells the president this.
Let's say that you wanted to coordinate with spaceships on different sides of the Earth. I couldn't send a direct signal, right?
You're talking about line of sight.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. The curve of the Earth prevents it. You'd need satellites to relay that signal in order to reach each ship. Well, I found a signal hidden inside our own satellite system. They're using our own satellites against us. And the clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking, and I went in to get a beer, and I almost face planted off camera here.
Nice.
I got caught up in some wires. I feel like Bambi learning how to walk in here.
What about the Georgia satellites?
Oh, gosh.
I got a little change in my pocket going ring-a-ling-a-ling.
So, meanwhile, the helicopter that's trying to message the alien spaceship gets blown up. Oh, gosh! They're not friendly aliens at all. The president and the White House evacuates at that point, which seemed like something that should have happened at the second an alien ship showed up over the White House. I feel like they don't let them just chill there.
Which, I will say, though, earlier, a few minutes before this, though, we do see that they were preparing, and they ask if he wants to leave, and he says, no, I'm going to stay. And I was like, hey, look, a president that doesn't leave.
All right.
I think another favorite is that they didn't take into account of how aggressive helicopters with signs on, and that they had to shoot them.
Yeah.
Just like that, like that releasing of that dove in Mars Attacks.
Yeah, they think that, like, it's funny. The helicopter comes up and it has all these flashing lights that are going off. Then you think that they're trying to say peace, love. We come in peace. We'd like to talk to you. And they're like, the aliens are in there. They're like, doo-doo-doo-doo. These motherfuckers just flipped us off. Enter the phasers now. Fire photon torpedoes. We're Balmer aliens.
They didn't even have like a synthesizer on. Off like in Close Encounters, you know, where they play each other.
Play me off, Lou. So the president and the White House evacuates. The ships begin to open up in the center, and all of a sudden, the one of the stripper girls we met earlier, who's an alien nut, is standing on the top of the LA building, which I believe is the Nakatomi Towers. I'm not sure at this, but it looks like the Nakatomi Towers, which in reality is actually, I believe, the Fox Building down in LA, because that's, if you're going to destroy one thing, Hollywood was making it clear, we're destroying Fox. And they open up and you can see her looking up at it.
They're opening up!
And all the alien nuts are super excited. They're hoping they get abducted. But the clock goes to zero. And the fucking beam of light starts coming down and getting bigger and bigger. And bigger! And around the world, we watch simultaneously as they destroy the White House, Empire State Building, the Nakatomi Towers, all of that shit, as well as, like, basically a Judgment Day-style fucking shockwave that goes throughout the entire city. Fucking flipping cars left and right. Absolute mayhem. And probably the best part of the movie to watch is seeing just...
Yeah.
I mean, prior to 9/11, that is, this was the coolest thing you could ever watch happening. I remember watching... I mean, not that 9/11 was cool, but I mean, this was not as cool to watch after 9/11.
Right.
It was harder to jerk off to. That's what I'm saying. It was harder, not impossible, just more difficult. But I love the special effects here because it's definitely, there's some CGI of like where the cars are like getting flipped, but mostly this is a real cool model that they built in the White House of the Empire State Building that you just get to see fucking explode, and it's pretty badass.
No, I totally agree. I had made the same note that I remember being so like enamored with how cool it was watching the spaceship blow up stuff. And even as an adult, even now, I still think it's like beautifully done. But yeah, I thought it was interesting that they had called the initial like reaching out to the aliens, they'd called it Operation Welcome Wagon. And I was like, that is so funny, because I also use the term Operation Welcome Wagon when I put out.
Oh man, if you want to slam parts with Ashley, Operation Welcome Wagon is all it takes.
And this is also how I watched the movie, because right after the White House is destroyed, I see that's the end and I turn the movie off. So.
Well, that's it. The world is saved. So, Vivica, it is important to mention that most of our main characters all get away, except for the gay assistant. He goes, "Oh Lord!" as the fucking fireball like engulfs him. But Vivica A. Fox is able to survive in the most ridiculous way. She's stuck in a tunnel as the wave of fire is coming through, and she gets into like a little side room, and then she stops to call their dumbass dog, who just barely evades the fucking fireball and jumps in, and we never hear about this goddamn dog again. Like, I was like, oh good, this is a good dog movie now. He said, no, we saved one dog, that's it. And it made zero sense to the rest of the movie.
Did we also mention the fact that Harvey Firestein is completely engulfed in flames in this movie? No.
Yeah, we just mentioned it 2 seconds before that.
Yeah.
So everything, the world is pretty much destroyed, multiple major cities, and then we see it's July 3rd. Ooh, it's not even the 4th of July yet.
Wait a second. We forgot that they show Chicago and engulfed in flames. It's like, oh no, the aliens didn't even attack here. So
yeah. Detroit is in flames. No, oh, I'm sorry. Detroit is still exactly the way it was before the alien attack. We're not sure if there's been any casualties at all. RoboCop is fine. Ted Nugent is now taking over martial law there.
Sorry, did I say Chicago instead of Detroit? Totally different city.
Yeah, you gotta switch it up, brother.
Did I say Baltimore? Baltimore is in flames? No, sorry.
So, L.A., Washington, and New York are now in total ruins. Randy Quaid is doing the classic, "I told you so about these darn aliens. They never let you use the shitter." And
also, the world is flat.
Yes. And Will Smith himself is ready to fight some aliens.
Add to this briefing, Captain Hiller?
No, sir. Just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all.
Right. You get your chance.
And all I have to say is, what did E.T. ever do to anybody? Okay? E.T. was a friendly alien that maybe put one finger in Elliot. Other than that, he was completely adorable and not blowing up two cities. You know?
That's just how they get you.
You know, sir, you will get your chance to kick E.T.'s ass and his fucking long-ass neck before he ever heals any plants or flowers ever again.
How fucking dare he?
You could shove those Reese's Pieces right up his ass.
So the battalion of fighter jets gets to head toward their target. Of course, it's Harry Connick Jr. And Will Smith flying side by side into battle. And I think that's going to take us to an end of episode one of Independence Day, so we can make this a fun two-parter, and I can have a break for 4th of July weekend. Anyway, Ashley, where can people find you at?
This episode is coming out
The last week of June. So,
last week of June. Okay.
Yes, July 4th weekend, though. This will be out for sure.
It would have already happened, but I'm starting to do live comedy again. I would have had a show in Harrisburg, so keep an eye on my Instagram and my Facebook page at Ashley Pontius Laughs. And keep an eye on our Instagram. Follow us, because I have some cool new summer drinks to go along with our summer episodes, so you can learn how to make them from me.
Yeah, I'm pretty psyched. So, yeah, Ashley has been making cocktails, and I've looked at some of them, and I want them in my body immediately. They look good. Give us you're gonna name drop a couple of them. You gonna tease?
Yes. Do you mind if I name drop the one for the episode that'll come out?
Yeah, do it. Drop it now.
So we did an episode for Brain Dead, and our first drink that's coming out, I made a drink called Grain Dead. It's made of grain alcohol, and I'll give you guys what it looks like and the recipe on Monday, the day it comes out.
Now, when you put out the recipe, are you going to do like a live video? Like, first you take this shit, you pour it into that shit, and then you shit it together like this, and then you got to drink.
It together.
Check out more Ashley's cooking tips here on Quality Time Podcasts.
So, sometimes I will. Sometimes if I think they're fairly simple, I'll just put up the recipe until you know what it'll look like. Other times for the more complicated ones, like for our back episode of Mandy, I made Search for the Serpent's Eye, which is a green drink, and I'll show you guys how to make that one.
Hell yeah. That's looking really good. Listen, you're such a refreshing addition, Ashley. I can't thank you enough for being part of this. show and the new Quality Time fam.
She wipes her lips.
I'm so glad you guys like my work.
Jeremy, you got anything going on soon?
I just wanted to give my last 2 cents to my idea for cocktails, which are pretty much just like regular drinks, except the last addition is always freshly chopped off chicken neck that I stick inside the drink as it moves around to store the drink.
I'm not even sure that was a full sentence you put together there, but I liked it.
It's called Cocktails because it's got a chicken head in it.
You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. That's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. The Second Saturday Shit Show is free every second Saturday of the month. Check that out with Mike Quinlan and Kimberly Callahan. Laugh Finders every noonday at Sunday, so check that shit out. Otherwise, Jeremy, take us out of here.
Oy vey, the aliens are attacking Schlemiel!
Ho 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 ho! Somebody picked a bad day to come to the planet Earth!
Oh, you thought you would come and take over now, our little planet. But little did you know we had Will Smith and Bill Pullman and Mary McDonald, Cheshire's too, and Robin O'Gia, Ronnie Quaid, and Margaret Collins, James Redford. Oh, and we've got Jeff Goldblum. He's gonna make a virus out of thin air that his Jewish dad done gave him the idea. 'Cause he's overbearing and just trying to protect his son. What are you gonna do? We got a stripper and we got Will Smith and we got Jeff motherfucking Goldblum. Jeff Goldblum. Jeff.
And Will Smith.